You're listening to the Judicial Watch Weekly Update with Tom Fitton.
Hey everyone, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here with our weekly update on social media. As always, much going on in the way of government corruption and oversight by Judicial Watch. We have a border crisis. I've got a report from the border for you from Judicial Watch. New lawsuits over the Hunter Biden, Joe Biden scandals that the media wants to ignore desperately. More exposés on racial critical race theory, and plus new documents detailing the horrors in the University of Pittsburgh and how they were using tax dollars, your tax dollars, to engage in gruesome experiments on fetal organs. So unfortunately, a lot to talk about today. So first up, I want to talk about the ongoing attacks on our civil liberties and our God-given rights, specifically to petition our government and speak about matters of public concern, which has come under escalating attack in recent days and weeks. We've had Barack Obama, who is the corrupt former president who used federal agencies to try to target and spy on, if not jail, his political opponents, lecturing Americans about the need for the government to come in and regulate, suppress, and censor speech that he thinks is disinformation. So a radical escalation of the attack on the First Amendment from a powerful leader such as Barack Obama is something that ought to be concerning. And then, of course, Hillary Clinton, who many, I think, rightly think is running again or wants to run again for the president, had a similar series of tweets advocating not only for suppression of speech generally, but an international move to suppress speech. So we've got the Biden administration on top of that, also specifically and quite directly calling on social media companies to attack free speech. And all of this is the background of the continuing battle by Elon Musk to try to buy and purchase Twitter, purchase control of Twitter, because he thinks that free speech is being lost on the internet and specifically on the Twitter platform, and he wants to bring it back. So all the left's horses and all the left's men are coming out to try to stop him from doing that. And so on top of that, we've had this hearing, and I don't know if you've watched any of it because I don't think it's been on television generally, but it's been on the internet. You've had the left also target politicians who dare to speak out on matters that they don't want them to speak out on, specifically matters related to disputing the 2020 election. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is an effective conservative voice in Congress, is being targeted by the extremist left who is taking language in the 14th Amendment about denying people positions of influence in Congress, or essentially seats in Congress, if they engage in insurrection, obviously a post-Civil War amendment, to suggest that they can go and sue her or sue entities to make it impossible for her to be on the ballot because she supported insurrection. So the hearing has her being, the idea that it's gone forward in our court system is an abomination. And on top of that, she's now being, just as I go to do this video, being questioned on First Amendment protected speech, where the leftist lawyer questioning her is suggesting that mentioning 1776 is a reason to question whether or not she wants to overthrow our government and constitution. It's crazy talk. It's obviously crazy talk. And however offensive and outrageous that process is as it relates to the Constitution and the rule of law and an attack on our civil liberties, it highlights the absurdity of the whole January 6th narrative, where you had a security situation that resulted in some violence and some people being let into the Capitol in addition to going into the Capitol in violation of the law, being turned into a vehicle to ban anything that the left wants to ban. Because Marjorie Taylor Greene is one of the few members of Congress who tells the truth about the corruption here in Washington, D.C., the ideological extremism of her political opposition, both frankly in the Republican Party too often, and of course the Democratic Party. And so she's hated. Now, they tried to do the same thing to Madison Cawthorn, who is a young congressman from North Carolina, right? He's from North Carolina. It's his first term. And he, because he spoke at a rally prior to the January 6th incident, they tried to pull this, you can't be in Congress anymore. And at least there, a court put a stop to the absurdity of pursuing this effort to keep Cawthorn off the ballot. But it highlights that the left generally has taken the position that if you followed the law, federal law and the Constitution, and objected to the way the election was objected, and specifically in Congress, objected to the certification of certain electors because you had concerns about the way the elections were conducted, they're suggesting that you are an insurrectionist and you are ineligible to be in public office. So, I mean, this is the sort of thing we hear and see from one-party states. And you have the extremist left mimicking their ideological cousins in China and in Russia and in Cuba and in Venezuela that seek to ban their political opponents from office or even from running for office. So we have former presidents, wannabe presidents, the current president, the party controlling Congress, attacking our core civil rights, our right to petition our government. And what they're trying to do is outlaw, effectively, in entire sections of their opposition party. So forgive me if I get a little bit heated about this, but I think it's pretty serious. And of course, as citizens, we're all being suppressed and censored by their allies on big tech that they often work with directly to censor Americans such as me, Judicial Watch, and I'm sure many of you have had your material censored, or even if you haven't had it censored, that you had something typed out and that you couldn't post or it was taken down, material that otherwise you should have been shown on these internet sites, such as Facebook and Twitter or Instagram or YouTube, you're not able to see. So you're being censored either directly or indirectly in terms of having content that you have a right to see or should have had the right to see about information about what your government's up to, for instance, that being diverted from your eyes. So these are serious times for our republic. And I was on a big podcast or a YouTube program, Timcast with Tim Pool earlier this week, and I highlighted that our republic is tottering. And we have to recognize that we've got a power center now in control in large measure here in Washington, D.C. It's not completely in control, obviously. They don't control everything. That kind of reject our constitutional system of government and want to destroy it and want to destroy your civil liberties. And we haven't faced that before, at least in recent history. So these are serious times, and Judicial Watch is going to investigate and speak out and sue and do what we can where we can. But let's not pretend it's not serious, because unless you understand the scope of the problem, because the problem can be addressed with good leadership, I think, where it's going to fester and grow worse. So Barack Obama's back. Hillary Clinton's back. Joe Biden's pushing it. The efforts against Elon Musk, the efforts against Marjorie Taylor Greene, the most sustained assault on the First Amendment in any one week we've had from our government probably in 100 years plus. So just another day at Judicial Watch, though, right? So the other crisis that the media doesn't really want to talk about, other than to the degree it might cause political problems for Joe Biden, is the Biden border crisis, where he has decimated our security measures on the border. President Trump had put in some basic security measures that alleviated or significantly mitigated the border crisis down in our border with Mexico. All of that went out the window with the extremist open borders crowd that came in with Joe Biden. And as a result, we've had record numbers of illegal aliens crossing, supposedly some seeking asylum, some not, all being treated and almost given welcome receptions, including tax dollars, by the Biden administration, who as a government has been outrageously aiding and abetting this illegal activity. they cross the border, they get across the border, they're giving essentially bus tickets, and I'm not exaggerating, or they're flown all over the country. So every town becomes a border town in a crisis like that. And the Biden administration and President Biden's refusal to enforce our nation's laws against illegal immigration, to me, should be certainly the subject, the primary subject of an impeachment inquiry, assuming that Congress ever gets its act together. In the meantime, Judicial Watch, or actually for some time, Judicial Watch has been concerned about our borders. We've tried to sue and stop and expose sanctuary cities that encourage illegal immigration, that violate the law. And of course, we've been examining the security crisis on our border, which is not controlled by the U.S. government. It is controlled by the cartels. The cartels control the other side of the border. And everything we do organizationally on our side is in response to them. So they play our law enforcement like a fiddle. They do great work down there with the circumstances they've been put in, but the circumstances are untenable for our Border Patrol and local law enforcement that are having to contend with this invasion. I think the most recent number the most recent numbers that have come out, which are always come out late because the Biden administration wants to slow walk the release of uncomfortable information, is over 200, I think it was 211,000 apprehensions or encounters at the border, if I think that's the number I'm going by there. And so that's only a section of those, or a small segment of those, who get by without having to run across the Border Patrol or it being intersected by the Border Patrol. Now, remember, the Border Patrol, just because you're apprehended, doesn't always turn you away. Tens of thousands of those people are allowed to enter the country despite crossing the border illegally because of a malinterpretation or misinterpretation or misapplication or purposeful refusal to enforce our laws against this type of transit activity. And of course, when you're engaged in that sort of human mass scale human trafficking, that's to the benefit of the cartels, who actually are doing that work. So they're financially benefiting from it, and they're using it as a way to move drugs and traffic, and in addition to the trafficking of human beings and sex trafficking associated with that as well. So this is what your tax dollars are doing. They are aiding and abetting human trafficking on our border and an invasion of our nation. And Judicial Watch's Chris Farrell, who is our director of investigations. I hope many of you know Chris from his work at Judicial Watch over the years. He went down to the border last week or the week before last, and he's been down there, you know, probably 15 to 20 times by now. And Chris was finding more information that the media is hiding from you, or the Biden administration is hiding from you. For instance, a senior official in the law enforcement, federal law enforcement down there, told Chris that the Mexican cartels had flown 9,000 drone flights into the United States to surveil law enforcement operations. According to our report that Chris generated, Mexican drug cartels conducted more than 9,000 drone flights in the last year, as I said, to surveil our law enforcement and security operations in the southern border region, a senior Homeland Security official told Judicial Watch this week. The drones are observing federal, state, county, and city agencies near the Mexican border, including the Border Patrol, the Texas Department of Public Safety, Texas National Guard, county sheriffs, and local police. The Border Patrol, which operates under Customs and Border Protection, has captured about a dozen of the drones and accessed the unmanned aerial vehicles' guidance and memory systems to gain intelligence information, according to a high-level official at the agency. Judicial Watch has learned that the Mexican drone incursions during a recent visit, Judicial Watch learned about those incursions by our as a result of our visit, and specifically while interviewing federal officials at the Center for Border Patrol Rio Grande Valley sector in Texas. Now, of course, we're further investigating the matter to get documents about what's going on, but this is what they're doing. They're using the drones to facilitate human smuggling and drug trafficking. They help identify gaps in border coverage and assist the cartels in overwhelming certain areas to create a diversion for moving sensitive or high-value loads through alternate border locations. So that's what's going on. So what you hear about going on in Ukraine is terrible, but we are facing a quasi-military operation on our border, and we are not responding as we should, as a sovereign nation should. And everyone knows what's going on. We've known it for years. The Mexican drug cartels run their operations in a quasi-military way. I remember reporting on this to you years ago. I mean, Chris had found, he had seen this work on the border. They had spotter locations, powered spotter locations. It's little solar power cells so that they could stay warm or do whatever they needed to do to communicate, overlooking the border on our side of the country, in our nation. And they'd see the border patrol in the distance, and they'd see where they were, and they would guide people in using the spotter system, as I said, from our side of the border. And it's just getting worse and worse. The Biden administration just has this, I don't know if it's incompetence. Well, let's just put it this way. I do know it's incompetence because it's the government, right? And you know, President Biden isn't all there in many respects. So there's that added stress war to our governance structure. But you've got the Biden administration, upset that all these people are crossing, but refusing because they're being captured by the radical left that wants open borders to enforce the law. Now, there was this famous remain in Mexico policy, because what had happened is people were coming across the border, fraudulently seeking asylum, but triggering the asylum process, being let out into our country as a result, never showing up, and effectively living here forever. So to stem that abuse, President Trump put this Remain in Mexico policy in place over the objections and caterwauling of everyone in the media and here in D.C., and effectively stopped it, because you had to stay in Mexico while your asylum claims were usually fraudulent, were being evaluated. So the Biden administration tried to just end that program. But the court said, you know, as Trump learned, that you just can't end government programs without notice and comment and, you know, going through the paces that the law requires. And the courts ordered him to say, you can't do that. You've got to go through, you've got to do a process. In the meantime, you got to keep the program going. So they seem to be, according to our report, defying the court order by failing to properly enforce the Remain in Mexico policy, even though they promised the court they would. This is what's going on. The Biden administration obviously has been under tremendous pressure to terminate the program completely, which they can't because of the court order. So what's going on is that the, let me see what the detail is here. So I want to get the, I guess you won't be surprised. A senior Customs and Border Patrol official in Texas told Judicial Watch that 130 illegal immigrants per day are permitted to be tagged for the MPP program. So of the thousands that cross, they only send back or make eligible to be sent back 130. Only about 40 of the 130 nominated each day to get returned to Mexico, the source confirmed. That keeps the court happy, supposedly. And a single male, by the way, would come in, and this is how they're gaming the system, reveal that he was married and has four children in Mexico, for instance. After authorities would identify him for being returned to Mexico while they evaluate his so-called asylum claim, he is still put on a 24-hour legal hold for consultation with volunteer legal organizations, which are obviously geared to making it harder to send him out and to keep him here. The leftist aid groups actively encouraged the Mexican man to declare himself lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, or questioning, because LGBTQT, I don't know how, I get, I'm at a loss for the alphabet number letters here, because it is one of the many exempt categories. I didn't know this was an exempt category. I guess I did, but it's quite obvious it is. If you say that you identify as LGBT, you're exempt from being deported, even if your asylum claim is obviously fraudulent, or you're obviously eligible to have to reside in Mexico while your asylum claim is being adjudicated. And so it's over. And presto, he's released into the country. And so that's how they're gaming the system. So, of course, Congress can help fix that, but the Congress is not controlled by those who want to protect us against protect our nation against this invasion. The president is planning to lift what is called Title 42, which allows them to summarily remove people based on for public health reasons. They're saying that, well, COVID somehow isn't important anymore, so therefore they need to lift it, which is obviously bunk. There are other significant public health reasons for maintaining security on the border in the face of the alternative, which is rather than 200,000 a day, a month, getting 800,000 a month. How would that not help but overwhelm public health services? So even Democrats are starting to get a little bit nervous about this. So what is the solution? Well, the first solution is enforce the law. Turn back everyone you can within the law. Don't think of ways to help illegal aliens avoid the law as a government official. Think of ways to enforce the law and err on the side of protecting our sovereignty. Secondly, we should have our military, and I've said this during the Trump administration, and I'll say it during the Biden administration, and I know it will be even less likely to get done during the Biden administration. Our military should be deployed to defend our country, and it means on the southern border. And if the federal government and the Biden administration refuses to do its constitutional duty to protect our nation from this invasion, the Constitution specifically allows states to protect themselves from invasion. And states can join compacts that don't have to be approved by Congress. Generally speaking, if states want to go into compact with each other, it has to be approved by Congress, with the exception of for their defense from invasion. So if you have hundreds of thousands of foreign nationals controlled by a quasi-military terrorist group, how is that not invasion? So states like Arizona and Texas, and it's not just the border states. Arkansas, Oklahoma, Illinois. The whole Midwest is affected by this. There's no town that isn't a border town because of this. So any state with brave and bold leadership can participate in protecting our nation in the face of the abandonment and Biden being AWOL on his oath of office. So this is what I think you should do. I'm giving you an action item. Ask your state representatives and your governors and your attorney generals, why aren't they doing this? Now, I know if you're in a blue state, you may think, well, it's not worth my time. It is worth your time. Because, listen, if they hear noise about out-of-control illegal immigration, it may change policy in ways you don't expect or may not understand initially. Because you see, for instance, Democrats getting nervous about this because even their own constituents are yelling them about it. So no matter who represents you, no matter who's your governor, I encourage you to share your views about the illegal immigration crisis. It's not just a federal issue. It is a state issue. The Constitution makes it a state issue. And so in the meantime, Judicial Watch will continue its FOIA work, to look for opportunities to challenge illegal policies in the courts. And, we're not forgetting about the border. I mean, here in Washington, one of the things that always bugs me is that Washington is, as far as what goes on in the West and in the border, it could be, as far as Washington is concerned, it's another country. They really don't care. I mean, it's so provincial. I mean, the people here in Washington think they're so sophisticated and so progressive, and they understand and they promote their ability to be empathetic on issues. Well, they don't care about anything that's not in their front of their face. And because it ain't happening here, they don't care. Believe me, if Washington, D.C. were on the border, we'd have a wall 1,000 feet high. So Judicial Watch will continue its investigations. We'll be there in person, and we'll be educating you and the American people and law enforcement and legislators about the border crisis. So the other issue that is out there that much of the big media doesn't want to talk about, even though it is a major issue for our country, is the corruption of the Biden family. We've had information out there for years now that Joe Biden is personally corrupt, and that corruption stems from his family's efforts to convert his public office into private gain. I've compared it to running a racketeering operation using his public office as a way to bring in money into the family operation. It's just like the way the mafia was operating. And that is something for which he needs to be held accountable. And we've had document after document, certainly the Hunter Biden laptops information and other information that's flowed as a result of those disclosures, despite the media's best efforts, have implicated the president personally in this corruption, certainly as he was vice president. And I just see Hunter Biden was over at the White House for the Easter egg roll. So Hunter is under investigation, and I may have talked about this last week, for all sorts of federal crimes. And I say investigation, I don't know how substantial it is since I don't trust the Justice Department. And he's over at the White House. I mean, imagine a similarly situated Republican or conservative. What would the media be doing? So we've got this major issue with Hunter Biden, and I don't know what they're doing at the Justice Department. I don't trust the Justice Department to do a thorough job. And either way, we have a right to find out independently what's been going on with Biden corruption. And that's why Judicial Watch has been front and center and been doing more than anyone, as best I can tell, to find out about Biden's corruption issues from our government. Includes lawsuits against the State Department, FOIA requests, and such. And we just filed a new lawsuit against the State Department for Hunter Biden documents. Essentially, he said, give us everything you got on Hunter Biden. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but not much. We asked for all cables and teletypes, all cables/teletypes, and email messages sent via SMART system, which is their which is an acronym for their communication system, that reference Hunter Biden. And we don't want any records that consist solely of media articles or compilations, because that's usually an excuse they give us. You know, we've got 10,000 documents, and most of the documents are news articles. Well, we don't necessarily want all that. So we had asked for the documents back in February. So beginning of February, and we just sued this week. So it's now been 2 months, over 2 months, nearly 3 months, and they ignored our request. And we know they've got documents about Hunter Biden because we've seen some of them from prior requests. Now, Judicial Watch had uncovered, for instance, that records that show the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, the anti-Trump ambassador, specifically warned in 2017 about corruption allegations against Burisma Holdings. During her November 2019 testimony, though, in the impeachment proceedings against Trump, where she was out to get Trump, Yovanovitch told lawmakers she knew little about Burisma. So not only did it expose Burisma corruption as it relates to Hunter Biden, but exposed State Department corruption, which covered that up. And in October production of last year, I guess it was, Judicial Watch received records which included a briefing checklist of a February 2019 meeting in Kiev between Yovanovitch and Sally Painter, who's an old Clinton administration official. And of course, everything always comes full circle with this crowd, doesn't it? She was a Burisma's lobbyist at a company called Blue Star Strategies. So Yovanovitch meets with Sally Painter and an official from Burisma. The briefing checklist noted that Painter also planned to meet with the Foreign Commercial Service officer, Martin Klassens, regarding the Burisma Group Energy Company. So you had Burisma working with our State Department through a Democrat-connected firm. So it went far beyond Hunter into Clinton land. And at the time of the meeting, Hunter Biden was serving on the board. You don't think anyone didn't know that? Of course they knew that. And these are some of my favorite records. I shouldn't say favorite in the sense of like I'm happy about them, but I think they're very illustrative of the level of detail the State Department had about the implications of Hunter Biden's corrupt relationship with Burisma. In September of 2020, we obtained records that showed that George Kent, who was a top official at the State Department in charge of Ukraine policy, he had sent an email, again, copied to Yovanovitch, highlighting Russia-linked media trolling, and I use the word trolling in quotes, Joe Biden over his son's business. So to sum up, there was an email that was sent just 4 days before Trump's inauguration. Biden had gone to Ukraine on one of his anti-corruption missions just 4 days before Trump came in. And so the Russian media, according to this email, is trolling Biden over his son's Burisma links, laughing about him being anti-corruption. And it's sent to Yovanovitch, again, the anti-Trump ambassador, who would then later testify against Trump. Oh, we didn't really think it was a big deal what was going on with Burisma. I didn't know anything. And the official writes, Burisma, the gift that keeps on giving. So they knew that Hunter Biden was causing foreign policy issues with respect to Russia and Ukraine. Why are you only hearing about this from me? This is public information. Judicial Watch doesn't hide this. It's on our internet site. We send out press releases. All the media can look this up. There's a war going on in Ukraine that could lead to a conflagration that our world has never seen before. And you would think there would be intense interest in Joe Biden's activities in Ukraine, his family's activities in Ukraine, his family's activities in Russia. Certainly the State Department was aware of it. Now, there are other documents that had come out separately. They had tried to talk to the Biden White House, or the Biden, when he was vice president, about the corruption issue with respect to Burisma and warning him off on it. Didn't go anywhere. And of course, the other State Department documents we want are Biden's trips to China with his son Hunter. And of course, you had all those Chinese business dealings with the communist fronts that were forking millions, if not billions of dollars into the Biden operation. So what is the State Department hiding? Well, we know they're hiding something because they refused to follow the FOIA law in turning the documents over to us. So I tell you, when they don't want to turn the documents over to you, it's usually because they don't have documents that are politically helpful. That's usually the case. The State Department is unlawfully ignoring FOIA law to protect Hunter and Joe Biden. We have no doubt, given our prior finds, that the State Department has many secrets about Biden corruption. So we're going to keep on pushing. This is, I guarantee you, there's going to be more FOIA lawsuits. I know we have others pending. So more documents will be coming out about Hunter Biden, no matter what prosecutors do. A lot of scandals. You know, the other big scandal is this crazed critical theory that's infecting our nation. And you see elements of it all over. You see it in our government. You see it in our schools. You see it in our military. You see it in our corporate culture. I mean, you're seeing that in Florida. I'll talk about Florida briefly before I get into this, where you had the Florida state legislature and the governor there, DeSantis, sign into law a bill that prevents inappropriate sexual identity and other type related talk with young school children. And the left went apoplectic again about that. That's critical theory. You've got to start talking to kids about these issues, whether it be sex or race or in inappropriate, hardcore, extremist ways. The earlier, the better. And of course, the media now has decided that anyone who opposes that is the worst person in the world. President Biden. The Biden White House has decided anyone who opposes that is the worst person in the world. And then the Disney company comes out and says they're in favor of it. They're in favor of protecting the ability of school teachers and third parties to engage in sexual talk with young children in our schools. So that's their corporate policy. And people in Florida are horrified at it. And voters in Florida, through their elected representatives in the state legislature there, passed a law restricting or retracting a special tax district that Disney had been given back in the late 60s that gave them certain financial benefits, tax benefits, and other governance benefits. They were essentially able to kind of run their own community down there. And they said, no more. You know, if you're going to be a political operation engaged in efforts to try to influence our children in our schools, well, why would we subsidize that? And why would we give you special benefits that are not available to other corporations generally? But it shows you that Disney was willing to put all of its corporate identity on the line to push this radicalism, this critical theory. There's critical race theory. Another flavor of it is critical gender theory. And then there's critical queer theory. They're all pieces of the same pie, which is a Marxist remaking of man, right? That the traditional structures of government, of society, and the traditional structures that govern humanity need to be torn apart. We need to go to war against religion, their thinking is. We need to go to war against our system of economics. And in the case of the sexual extremism, our biology. Because all that gets in the way of the revolution. And we'll tell you what to think the left thinks. And we need the people to be malleable and to have no way of thinking about the world other than through the Marxist revolutionary perspective. And we see that in our government. You know, this theory is the animating theory and narrative of the Biden administration. Everything they do is based on pursuing critical race theory and related measures. And I shouldn't say everything they do, but it's like the corporate guy shows up and says, we're going to be pushing this. Now, they may be building widgets, but they're pushing all this radical agenda items on their employees in the meantime. And it's going on in the government. I mean, we've exposed it repeatedly, sued about it in our schools and out of feds, and we just got new documents. I don't think we needed even to sue for these documents. So there's a victory for the rule of law, at least. So we had filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the National Credit Union Association asking for documents essentially about critical race theory. And they gave us documents that show that employees were forced to undergo inclusion and unconscious bias training for the agency from the agency. Now, what is the National Credit Union Association, credit union agency? Well, it regulates credit unions. So if you have a credit union, they're their regulator. So you probably never heard of it before, but it's an important agency, at least with respect to our financial system. And then there's this big push in there about microaggressions, which again are supposed transgressions that are unintentional, yet supposedly harmful and toxic. But this is radical propaganda that is a racialist and racist because it usually targets and is designed to target men and whites. And it also treats blacks like they're just victims and they can't be treated any way other than as victims. So it's paternalistic in that regard. I mean, the left hates everything. They do. They don't support the groups they say they support. They have contempt for them. I'm talking about the extremist left. Unconscious bias. I mean, that's critical race theory in two words. You don't even know you're racist. Because you've been created and you've been lived in a systematic racist country. So you're racist without even knowing it. and you need to be deconstructed. Your thinking needs to be deconstructed in programs like this. So they're supposed to be regulating the national credit unions across the country, and they're forcing these employees, these federal employees, to go through this brainwashing program that objectifies them by race and sex, usually. They're forced to watch a film, for instance, or I shouldn't say they're forced to, but they're invited to watch a film. There's a whole office there, Office of Minority and Women Inclusion, which is alienating to anyone else who isn't a minority or a woman, right? So there you go. You've already got that racial separatism there. They're invited to watch a film, Race, The House We Live In, which is the first film about race, to focus not on individual attitudes, but on the ways our institutions and policies advantage some groups at the expense of others. Its subject is the unmarked race. We see how benefits quietly and often invisibly accrue to the majority, not necessarily because of hard work. Again, there's that attack on hard work, because hard work is racist too, by the way. But because of the racialized nature of our laws, courts, customs, and perhaps more pertinently, housing. The email describes their talks as, quote, a safe place to have difficult conversations about race, identity, privilege, unconscious bias, cultural appropriation, and a host of other thought-provoking topics. I mean, it's a Marxist group meeting. There's a talk called Deconstructing White Privilege. Can you imagine if they had something saying, you know, highlighting or deconstructing black privilege? People would be outraged, and rightly so. And then they sent out this other news item highlighting and we've got just more and more examples of this, and I encourage you to go to our website and look at them directly, about the microaggressions. Again, which are supposed affronts that people who are on the alleged wrong end of them can take from perfectly innocent comments, or even thoughtless comments, in terms of not having any ill motive behind them. Like, for instance, a microaggression can include naming all the buildings or rooms after, quote, white men, and white is capitalized. By the way, capitalizing white and black is racist. I mean, that's just like reminds one of the South African apartheid system. That's how crazed the left has become. They've come full circle from wanting to shut down the South Africans for having apartheid to embracing their racial segregationist policies by labeling people as white and black in a capital way, using capitalized letters that track and guide their entire interactions with society. Americans should be disturbed that the Biden administration is using the agency responsible for regulating credit unions to subject employees and the public to an extremist and discriminatory critical race theory ideology that attacks individuals based on race and other issues. And again, it's not just the employees that are forced to go through this. They want the whole agency to enforce the laws according to critical race theory. So under the guise of, quote, system, under the guise of fighting systemic racism, they're going to actually engage in systemic racism. I mean, that's I shouldn't say the irony, but it's one of the big lies and shell games they're playing with us here. They pretend that they're combating systemic racism when, in fact, their goal is to institute systemic racism. Or more specifically, Marxism. So critical race theory is a threat to our country. It can tear the country apart. It's illegal, in my view, and unlawful, and it ought to be opposed. And we're going to expose it and oppose it anywhere, everywhere we can. with your support, of course. So another major issue, or what ought to be a major issue, obviously, is the issue of abortion. Now, I know the Supreme Court is considering now whether to reconsider or overturn Roe versus Wade and its related decisions that have essentially legalized abortion throughout the entire 9 months of pregnancy in the United States of America. But in the meantime, this on-demand abortion regime has resulted in a market that is barbaric and grotesque. It is a market for fetal organs that involves trafficking and experimentation using the fetal organs of unborn human beings killed through abortion. During the Trump administration, they stopped funding it. During the Biden administration, turned the spigot on. I'm not sure if they began funding it again, but Judicial Watch has been in the forefront of exposing this fetal organ trafficking and experimentation. Usually it's, quote, on humanized mice. How does that phrase sit with you? To say it, frankly, is to highlight its barbarism, isn't it? So one of our lawsuits to expose what was going on was with the Center for Medical Progress. And through that, we obtained documents from the University of Pittsburgh, which are horrifying, to put it mildly. They showed that nearly $3 million in federal funds were spent on their quest to become, quote, a tissue hub, unquote, for human fetal tissue ranging from 6 to 42 weeks gestation. Among other findings, the records revealed the aims of the project listed in the original 2015 proposal for this tissue hub was to develop a pipeline for the acquisition and quality control and distribution of human urinary and genital organs and functions. There's a technical term for it that I'm not going to be able to pronounce, so I'll skip it. So the samples were, again, attained throughout development, 6 to 42 weeks, and generated an ongoing resource to distribute fresh developmental human samples from various stages to this project that was investigating this issue of urinary and genital organs and functions. In the proposal, Pitt notes that it has been collecting fetal tissue for over 10 years, including liver, heart, gonads, legs, brain, kidneys, and bladders. They had over 300 fresh samples, and they were excited that the collections could be significantly ramped up, as material could have been accrued from as many as 725 cases last year. So poor University of Pittsburgh, they're saying, look at all these dead unborn human beings whose organs we could be extracting. Give us money and you'll have hundreds of them. They talked about how they had a strong working relationship with the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and the Department of Pathology, as well as three laboratories in the hospitals there. This included a lab boasting a butcher boy bandsaw for sectioning bone. Well, isn't that nice? And a frozen section room with digital feed to and from operating rooms so they could have instantaneous discussions with the surgeons as well as immediate show and tell for them. And these are labs, ironically, in the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. Later in the proposal, Pitt states that it records the warm ischemic time, I think that's how it's pronounced, on our samples and takes steps to keep it at a minimum to ensure the highest quality biological specimens. So what that means is it's referring to the amount of time an organ remains at body temperature after blood supply has been cut off. Warm ischemic time differs from cold time, which refers to the amount of time the organ is chilled. Pitt's statement suggests the time between the abortion and the collection is minimal. Or are they taking it from babies that are still alive? I don't know. So as a result of those disclosures, there was outrage across the nation, and including from members of Congress who demanded accountability for this. And so University of Pittsburgh, they had an internal investigation, which I'm sure just found that they did nothing wrong. And what happened is University of Pittsburgh, and this is the document we just obtained, that he sent a letter, one of the officials, to Francis Collins, who was then the head of NIH. "I write regarding ongoing efforts to undermine important science using fetal tissue. As you no doubt know, various public universities have been the subject of rotating attacks about research using fetal tissue, including some citing NIH support for the research." I think in this one, it was specifically FDA support, but it doesn't matter. They're all creatures of the NIH. We're cousins. They're all within the same HHS agency. It's now the University of Pittsburgh's turn in the spotlight. The event that triggered this, they say, is the is a publication of a paper attached on grafting fetal skin onto rodents. So what they were doing was they were actually grafting fetal scalps onto rodents. And the oblivious official writing this letter to Francis Collins helpfully attached the study. And typically I might say, let's show the pictures, but I don't want to show the pictures. You can go look at them. But you want to see human hair on a rodent as a result of a baby being killed through abortion. That's where you'll go find it. There is an organized attempt to delegitimize science. There you go. Science. Based on fetal tissue rather than identify misbehavior. Now, of course, the misbehavior, they think, is only if you violate the law. Well, oftentimes they could be violating the law. But they refuse to believe that anything that could be in compliance with the law would be moral misbehavior or misbehavior that should never be funded by taxpayers, even if it's technically legal. And they want the scientific community to stand together with institutions. And they're talking about Judicial Watch. They're talking about our client, the Center for Medical Progress. And so what happens is, Collins and his team, they set up a meeting. So you've got the documents confirming that there was collusion between the University of Pittsburgh and NIH over the fetal organ, as I call it, a chop shop, in the University of Pittsburgh paid for with federal tax dollars. Here we have the federal government and a major university seemingly desperate to continue the barbaric trafficking of organs of human beings killed by abortion. So that's what's going on in your government. Oh, you think COVID's important? Oh, no. They're helping Pittsburgh defend themselves against the moral outrage and congressional outrage of using tax dollars to experiment with fetal organs. Now, Judicial Watch has separately uncovered documents, again, supported with your tax dollars, showing that they were purchasing fetal organs and trafficking in them, it looks like, in seeming violation of the law. The court, in ordering the release of certain documents, suggested that was the case in our case. Talking about the organs being fresh and never frozen and having a price list of organs. So, you know, this is the moral preening that goes on here in this city over issues. You know, the left pretends to be, and frankly, too many establishment Republicans, you know, they're complaining about all these various issues that are supposedly morally outrageous. You know, all, you know, that we need higher taxes for, or government's not doing this and not doing that. In this case, we have tax dollars going to support the dismemberment of unborn human beings killed through abortion, and engage and using those materials, and I hate to use that term, using those organs to engage in scientific, so-called scientific research. Do you want to support that? Certainly, any debate about abortion, this ought to be front and center. But this is what the abortion regime has wrought: a market for the body parts of those killed by abortions. Of course, if they're not human beings, what's the purpose of these things, right? Well, why would there be any value to them if they're not human beings? Of course they're human beings. So they really don't want to talk about this because it highlights what abortion is about. And I suspect even if you support abortion, this makes you uncomfortable. Are the women involved in these abortions giving informed consent about the use of these, what happened to their unborn human being offspring? I don't think so. So there's a lot going on at Judicial Watch, as you can see. We've got this morally and ethically and in terms of government important work exposing the misuse of tax dollars or the use of tax dollars for these Frankenstein-like experiments. We're on the border exposing the truth there. We're taking on Biden corruption. We're taking on the White House. We're exposing the critical race theory. We're standing fast and against the assault on our public order and Republican order with a small r, or constitutional order by the left, the First Amendment. We're doing it all. And we need your support to do it. And I encourage you to give us your support at judicialwatch.org, at judicialwatch.org. We're all over the internet. They haven't knocked us out yet. And with your support, we'll continue to stand strong on behalf of the rule of law. Thank you, and I'll see you here next time on the Judicial Watch Weekly Update.
Thanks for listening to the Judicial Watch Weekly Update with Tom Fitton. For more information, visit www.judicialwatch.org, because no one is above the law.